Blog Talk Radio.
Listeners out there. So if you are happen to be listening and during this time, and this is not our normal time, and if you'd like to call in, our number is 347-637-3220. The number is 347-637-3220. And excuse us, we had some technical difficulty today. And anyways, so with all of that, Sundee is here. Sundee Frazier, who is my friend, who's a writer, and she's here, and we're going to talk about her new books. We're going to talk about life. We're just going to talk about everything. So Sundee.
Hi, Kim. I'm here.
Hello, give us a little bit about your background and what you do and who you are.
Ooh, that's a big question. But my name's Sundee Frazier, and I am a children's book writer, a mom. In terms of my children's books, I've been writing for about 10 years or so, and I've got 3 published novels. They're geared towards sort of 4th to 6th graders. And I would say I'm hoping that my unique contribution to the field of children's writing is going to be in the realm of biracialism. Actually, I'm a biracial person myself, African-American and white. That's a big part of my experience growing up in a lovely interracial family. And so all of my characters have been of mixed race. And I hope to create stories and books that are going to connect with those kids who feel like they're from more than one culture for whatever reason. They could be mixed race like me, or transracially adopted, or third culture kids like your own, who are being raised in a different culture from their culture of origin. So that's kind of what I hope will be part of my unique contribution to the field that I work in. That's a little bit about me. Can you hear me? Hello, are you there, Kim?
Sundee?
Hi.
Okay, we had a little bit of a technical difficulty. I couldn't hear you for a while.
I know. I wasn't sure. I was just talking. I looked down, and then I said, "Are you there?" And I didn't hear anything. Are we on now? Or?
Yeah, we're on now. Okay, so you talked a little bit about yourself. And anyways, tell us about your there's a lot of teens out there who are right now, they're doing a lot of book reports, and they're trying to figure out what books to read. So please tell us about the 3 books that you write and that you have written that you would promote for a 5th grader.
Sure. Well, my first book is called Brendan Buckley's Universe and Everything in It. It's about a 10-year-old science kid who asks questions about everything. So he loves to ask questions, but the one question he knows not to ask anything about is the whereabouts of his white grandpa. He doesn't know him. He doesn't know where he is, and he knows he's not supposed to ask about that. But then And this is when the story really gets going, because every story has to have that point when there's sort of a crisis or something happens to get the story going. He actually runs into his grandfather at a rock and mineral show and realizes his grandfather's been living only a few miles away from him his whole life, and he didn't realize it. So he decides to build a secret friendship with his grandpa to discover the truth of where he's been for the last 10 years. So that's a book about intergenerational relationships, you know, family, family secrets, and Brendan trying to figure out his own identity as a mixed-race kid. His dad is black, his mom is white, and so he's kind of trying to figure out himself, even as he gets to know the history of what happened in his family before he came along. So that's the first book. It's got science, it's got geology, it's got Taekwondo, because Brendan is a blue belt Taekwondo practitioner, and it's got some action. So it's fun, and I hope it's also meaningful in terms of what happens for the family through Brendan's inquiry and Brendan sort of having the courage to ask questions and go where no one else in the family has been willing to go. So that's the first book. The second one I wrote is a departure from that. It's actually about two sisters, twin girls. They're also from an interracial family, and this book is called The Other Half of My Heart. And their mom is black, and their dad is white. And these sisters, Minnie and Kira, they're very close. You know, they're twins, but no one looking at them from the outside would guess they're twins, let alone sisters, because one looks black and the other looks white. Just sort of the way they came out of the womb, they took on different racial characteristics, and so it's their story of how when they get sent off to spend a couple weeks with their grandma, their black grandma, down south in North Carolina, and what happens in terms of the pressures that, you know, of course they go into sort of a pressure pot, a pressure cooker, as they are entered into a pageant for black girls, and sort of how their relationship gets put to the test. Through that contest and through their grandmother, who tends to favor the lighter one. And so that was a very interesting book to write. But that one also, it sounds serious, and it does have some serious themes in terms of race and identity as well.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I mean, I've had so many people tell me I laughed out loud reading this book because the girls sort of, they're not really fond of their black grandma, who's a little old school, pretty strict. And so the girls have their way of, you know, getting under her skin and the pranks that they pull and that sort of thing. So it's very funny as well. I've had people tell me I laughed, I cried, I want to see it as a movie. So that's the other half of my heart. And then my third book that just came out this past January is actually a sequel to Brendan Buckley's universe and everything in it. It's called Brendan Buckley's Sixth Grade Experiment. So perfect for your sixth graders. Or anyone, any kid from fourth to sixth grade, I hope would love the book. Brendan takes on middle school and methane production because, again, he's a science kid, so he enters the national science competition and is working with alternative energy, methane creation. And then Morgan, the new girl at school who he has a crush on but doesn't want to admit it. She's also a science kid and kind of gives him a run for his money. So, you know, we take on middle school girls, friendships in that book. It's a little much less about race and identity like my first two novels and much more about just the world of middle school. So I've had kids tell me how much they liked that book because they really related to what Brendan is going through, you know, starting this new phase of his life in middle school. So those are my three books that are out right now. And I've been really fortunate to get some good attention, especially for the first book, which won an award from the American Library Association, the Credit Scott King Award for New Talent, and that kind of put that book on the map. And so I've gotten some nice, you know, publicity, so to speak, for my books at this point, which is I'm very, very grateful for.
Wow. Well, congratulations. Many more prosperity and awards coming your way for the other half of your heart, and then Brendan's middle school. So why did you decide that you want to become a writer, and how what would you recommend, or what would you for people who want to Right. What is your recommendation?
I heard the first part, which is how did I become a writer, basically. And then is the second part, because you're breaking up just a little bit, is the second part what are my recommendations to someone who wants to become a writer?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Well, I wouldn't say of course I did decide to become a writer, but I really think that I was born a writer. I mean, I really do think that there's something about just my mission on earth, my calling, so to speak, for being here that has to do with being a writer. Because I can see the evidence of me being a writer from pretty young. Fifth grade is when I would kind of go back. That's what I go back to as the pivotal moment for me being encouraged in my writing by my fifth grade teacher. You got to love those teachers who just inspire their students to realize their gifts. And I had Miss Mansfield who affirmed me for my creative writing and put in my head the possibility that I could, that I was good at this, you know, that this is something I was naturally good at. So in fifth grade, I remember writing creative stories and the thrill of writing, just how much I could just get lost in these stories about kids, you know, finding time machines and fairies showing up to, you know, grant wishes. And I was that kid on the playground who was loved to, you know, pretend that the Jungle Gym was a ship and, you know, my friends and I were orphans looking for treasure. And so I was that kind of kid who loved to imagine stuff. And then in college, I actually ended up going into journalism, broadcast journalism at University of Southern California. And, of course, that was sort of my attempt to pick something practical. It's like, well, I love to write, but I got to get a job. So I guess I'll go into journalism. But, you know, my favorite class of my entire 4 years at USC was actually a children's literature course. So, again, there's another signpost, right? I mean, I really believe we each have been given a calling, and there are the signposts if we're paying attention, you know, to what we are meant to do in this world. So children's literature was my favorite class of my whole college experience, and that in that class we just got to read kids' books, and our final project was to write and illustrate a picture book. Now, I am not an illustrator. I'm an author, but, you know, I actually enjoy drawing these pictures, and I pulled probably two or three all-nighters to finish this project, mostly because I procrastinated, but I also just found it so thrilling, you know, to make up the story and to draw these pictures. It was like I was so buzzed. I didn't even need a single cup of coffee, you know, to stay awake all night because I was enjoying it so much. And, you know, when you're in that place, you have found something that's really the thing, you know, that you're meant to do. So that was in college. And then, you know, I did some other things. I actually ended up in campus ministry. I was like a campus pastor, basically, for college students for several years until I got married at about at 27. And I really had not pursued my writing at all. And I had gotten married, and my husband and I were on a plane going somewhere, and he turned to me and he said, if you could do anything without regard to money, what would you do? And instantly it just came into my brain, and I just blurted it out. I said, I would be a children's writer. And, you know, I just knew at that point, this is what I'm meant to do. I just needed someone to ask that question. And I think it's such a profound question because that without regard to money part, you know, it's like so often we're so kind of locked into, I've got to make money, that we miss, you know, our passion. And, of course, we do have to make some money, you know, to live. But I don't think we probably need to make as much money as we think we do. But, you know, so there are practical realities. We've got to make some money. But I think if you can ask that question, if I could do anything without regard to money, what would it be? You might, and allow yourself just to say the first thing that comes to your mind, you know, without inhibition. I think you can get in touch with those deeper passions. And so that's what happened for me at 27. And by the time I was 30, I just knew I had to set a goal for myself. So at my 30th birthday party, you know, I started writing after that, but on my 30th birthday party, I announced to all my guests, so I made it public. I said, by the time I turn 40, I'm going to write a children's book and have a children's book published. And I kind of just put myself out there, which I think is another thing we have to do at times. You have to kind of make it public, you know, go public and say, this is what I'm going to do. And then things start falling into place. Now, of course, I thought I was giving myself plenty of time, you know, 10 years. Oh, yeah, I can do that. 10 years, no problem. Well, Brendan Buckley's Universe, my first published novel, came out a few days before I turned 39. So it practically did take 10 years to publish that first novel. I guess I said earlier I'd been at this for about 10 years. It's probably more like 15 at this point. But, so that's kind of my journey in terms of finding children's writing or children's writing finding me. But I think there's a deep childlike part of me that just is that's what I tap into when I'm writing my stories, is just remembering what it's like to be a kid. And I just love kids. I think kids are our most valuable resource. They need to be invested in. And so I feel so honored to be able to create books that can encourage kids on their journey to figuring out who they are.
And what are your favorite children's book?
Oh, you know, as a kid, I loved Roald Dahl. So Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, James and the Giant Peach, those are the books that I remember the most, having the biggest impact on me. I don't actually write that kind of stuff, even though I wish I could. Like, I'd love to write that sort of fantastic realism where you're, like, in a real setting, but fantastical things happen. Mm-hmm. And maybe one day I will. I haven't quite figured out how to get into that level of imagination, because I just think it's brilliant. But my favorite books, I mean, some of my favorite books as an adult that are written for kids are probably Christopher Paul Curtis, who wrote Bed Not Buddy and The Watsons Go to Birmingham 1963. He's an African-American guy who has written some incredible historical fiction. Elijah Buxton is his most recent one, which won him a Newbery. He's won several Newberries and Coretta Scott King Awards. And his books are just, they're on the must-read list for me, for any kid. Obviously, not black kids only. I mean, this is, everyone needs to know this history because it's American history. You know, he deals with stuff that went on during the Civil Rights era. Elijah Buxton goes all the way back to slave times and a kid helping slaves escape to freedom. So he writes great stuff. K.D. Camillo is my other favorite, who I always mention. She wrote Because of Winn-Dixie. And some other just wonderful, wonderful books, like Tale of Despero. And then I have to mention Linda Zoo Park, because she's awesome. She's a Korean-American writer, and she wrote A Single Shard, which won the Newbery, about a Korean boy. Have you seen that one? It's set in ancient Korea.
Uh-huh,
It's so well written.
Uh-huh.
And an unusual time period and a culture that we're not that familiar with. But I just think, for me, literature is, it's windows into other people's lives and cultures. And exposing children to, you know, other people's experiences and helping them to enter into the other people's worlds, it's what we need. It's what children need to be able to learn empathy and to learn what we have in common. And so I really encourage people to pick up books that maybe they are not sure if their kids would like it, because it's a different, you know, that kid's from a different culture or a different time. Well, that's true, but we're all still human. And so you give a child a gift when you give them a book that allows them to enter into another person's world. So I really encourage that. So, Linda Sue Park, excellent, excellent. So those are some of my favorites. Oh, and her most recent one, I think, is called Long Walk to Water, which deals with a Sudanese boy. It kind of deals with the Lost Boys and the Civil War in Sudan, and it's tough stuff. She does a good job of handling it for the middle grade set, so it's not too graphic, but it's another way to help kids get exposure to, you know, things that are going on around the world and ways that children are affected by war, by poverty, by struggle, by difficulty, and give kids more of a global consciousness. So children's literature just has the potential to do so much, not just for kids, for all of us. Mm-hmm. And I personally love to read kids lit. It's probably my choice. You know, if I'm just leisure reading, I'll pick up a book meant for kids, but knowing that it's going to be a really good story for anyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that leads us to the next question, because you're talking about empathy and you're talking about, you know, teaching kids about that about other culture, about that they're not just living in a single space and it's only them, but there are just a fabric of all the different types of beauty and backgrounds out there. So what is your definition of compassion?
My definition of compassion. When I think of compassion, I actually think about the root words for that for compassion, which in Latin, it comes from two words, which mean to suffer with. I remember learning that as a college student, that compassion literally means to suffer with. And so I think it means coming alongside of people and allowing their troubles and their struggles to become our own, so that we're working together for solutions. We're working together to solve problems that really are all of our problem, you know, because we are so interconnected in this world. So we can't just say, well, that's their problem, it's not my problem. Because if there's a problem in the world, it really is all of our problem. It's going to eventually affect all of us.
Uh-huh.
So I think compassion is realizing, recognizing that that we're all in the same boat together. And so we need to help lift each other up and help solve problems together.
And you mentioned that you used to, when you were in college, you used to be a pastor, is that
mm-hmm.
right? Or
mm-hmm.
So what would be one of the stories that you could share with us that talks about compassion?
Oh, man, there are so many stories. But I think the thing that stands out to me the most from my time, both as a college student and as a pastor in Los Angeles, is for myself and for students who then, once I, you know, graduated from college and was mentoring other college students, being exposed to urban poverty and homelessness. Coming from Eastern Washington, a small town in Eastern Washington where homelessness was not an issue, to the big city of Los Angeles and recognizing some of the issues in the city, that was eye-opening for me. And then being able to lead students in that. So, you know, we would do things like students would go out into Santa Monica, to the park, and we'd have meals to serve the homeless. Or, you know, I did some pretty kind of almost dumb things now when I think back on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, as a young woman living with a couple other young women, you know, we met this one homeless guy on the streets, and he was just obviously struggling, you know, and we
uh-huh.
allowed him to sleep on our couch for several nights.
Uh-huh.
You know, probably not the smartest thing to do, but we were moved, you know, by people's situation. Now, the most memorable thing I remember is the LA riots, of course. And I remember just being down in the heart of it and getting a bunch of students and going out to into the city where there were riots were happening. People were breaking into stores and things and looting. And I remember just being at a grocery store where everything was just, it was just strewn out on the street. And, you know, things had, juice had spilled all over and soaked up all the paper goods. And so it was just this big mass of mess, you know,
mm-hmm.
and spending time trying to help these people, you know, clean it all up. And it was obviously, it was just a little piece in a huge, huge issue. And it was a really tough time. But I think more than anything, what it did was it helped me to realize, you know, like I was saying earlier, we're all in this boat together. And when a crisis like that happens, you can't just say, well, that's someone else's problem. It really did affect the whole city. And so being able to be a part of that, the cleanup effort there was certainly a very memorable experience for me.
Wow.
And,
oh,
you know, memory.
And, you know, today is 9/11.
Of course.
And it's the time for remembrance. And I just want to take this time, since you're talking about compassionate is to suffer with in Latin, right? So
mm-hmm.
every time when 9/11 comes around, it's like an anniversary. It's a year. And what I try to teach my kids is yes, it is a time where we have to learn to respect for those people that pass, and also respect for those who are still serving, right?
Mm-hmm.
And especially with the families. And for all the spouses out there who sacrifice a lot to help out their soldiers, to help out their fellow partner, to do what needs to be done. And it's also a great time to think that we all have choices. And that's another reason why I'm so glad that you're on this week, Sunday, is because you bring light into your writing, and you have so much passion. And this is actually the first time that you and I actually talked about your writing, because we're neighbors. We talk about everything else, but really your writing. And I could sense from your voice that you're really, really passionate in what you do. And because you're so passionate, you give all of your heart. And you write beautiful stories that not only shows of what other cultures is about, but you also get into that kid's mind and you get to the point and you're like, hey, you know, here's a story and these are the feelings. And then you take the kids to that journey and you bring empathy and sympathy, and you actually help guide the kids to be more compassionate, to understand the suffering of others. So it's really it's an honor to have you on this week, on this day. And like you said, you know, we all have a choice to make a change, to have courage, to live out your passion so you could impact the world and walk your walk, talk your talk, and do what you're passionate about, because you are making a positive change to be compassionate in the world, to help out other people in the world. So I just want to thank you so much for being on the show. And
I'm so glad you've been here.
Before you go, I just want to have one last question. It's a surprise question that I always, you know, ask my guests.
Oh, boy.
So,
okay.
Are you ready?
All right. Fasten your seatbelt. Here we go.
If you had to get on a boat and you could only bring one book with you, and that's it, just one book with you, and then you happen to be stranded in this beautiful island somewhere in the Atlantic Ocean, and you could only take one book with you, what would that book be?
What book would that be?
One book. One book, Sunday.
Oh, that's tough.
I know.
I hope this doesn't sound too cliche, but I probably would bring my Bible, quite honestly.
I knew you would say that. I bet you're just going to say that.
I just would. It's full of so much encouragement, and it keeps me grounded, and it keeps me connected to the one who created me. And so I think I go with that.
Oh, I know.
Hey, but I just have to say, you know, you're talking about making a choice, and it does take a choice every day. Writing is the most fun thing that I do, but it's also the most difficult. Maybe fun is not the right word. Rewarding is what I would say, but it is very difficult. It's challenging to make a choice to do the thing we're called to do. Sometimes you don't want to do it. But I have a prayer that I say every day that says, you know, there's only one of me, God, so if I don't tell the stories that only I can tell, they're not going to get told. So help me to be brave and to do my work today and to believe, you know, basically that the outcome will be good. So I just had to throw that in there. It can be hard to make that choice, but it's always worth it.
Because
I encourage your listeners to be brave and make that choice to do what they were called to do.
And that takes a lot of courage. And that's what you do, because you choose courage instead of fear, right? You choose to make that change for yourself to do something great. And on that same note, I have this little motto where I sit on my computer, and it says, let us use those gifts that we have received and pass it on the love that has been given to us. So that's what you do, Sunday.
Thank you, Kim.
Receive the great love, and you write it out, and you pass on. So that is Passion is On is part of Compassion Dakini. So like I said, with all the words of wisdom for this week is pass it on. Compassion, compassion. Choose compassion, choose courage. Face your fear, do it anyway. The triumph is near. So if you just go out and just face it and do it anyway, who knows? You know, look at
good words.
Look
good
at what
words,
you've
Kim.
Done. So I wish you lots and lots of luck on your future book, and I hope that the sequel to Brandon Buckley wins many, many, many more awards. Thank you so much, Sundi.
Thank you, Kim. I look forward to seeing you again one day. Bye.
Okay, bye.